Welcome to Your College Bound Kid,
a podcast for parents, college counselors, students, and anyone who wants a deep dive into the world of college admissions.
I'm Mark Stucker, and I'm the founder and producer. Our mission is to make college knowledge available to all. We care deeply about your kid. We believe college is a match to be made and not a prize to be won. We believe in being genuine and transparent. We are committed to covering a variety of topics, including the tough subjects. Thanks to your generosity, we're committed to providing a minimum of 10 hours of fresh, commercial-free content every month, with episodes every Monday and Thursday. We have a variety of co-hosts because we believe and value diverse perspectives. You're our listening family, and we get great joy every time we meet with you, as we do our best to give you tools so your students can soar and reach their limitless potential. Good afternoon, friends. I had a sensational last 10 days. Plantation, Florida, Coral Gables, Florida, and in Boca Raton. But I'm back. The daffodils are blooming. And as much as I love traveling, home sweet home, the garden is here. Get out and do some gardening. And you know what? I kind of do not like recording from a hotel. It's just so many distractions. So it's nothing like being in your studio. Friends, I was going to take my monologue time today to share some highlights from this trip, but I've decided I'm going to kind of sprinkle those in throughout multiple episodes over the next several months. I will tell you a couple things. I spent 3.5 hours at the University of Miami, and I'm going to go old style college spotlight. That's right, where I tell you what I think of the strengths and weaknesses of a school, let you know the student I think will thrive at the U, which is the nickname for UM. And I'm going to record this in March, and you'll hear it in April. So that's my commitment to you. I was going to do Texas A&M first, but because I just visited the U, I'm going to do that one first and then get Texas A&M to you as far as old-style spotlights, one that we haven't done in over a half a year, but you've asked for us to return to some of them. I spent 2.5 full days at Lynn University in Boca Raton, and you're going to hear an interview with Stephanie Papilio, the Executive Director of Undergraduate Admissions, and Lynn is as innovative a school as you're going to find in the country. So I'm looking forward to doing that interview. We've actually had it lined up even before this trip. So that's something you can look forward to. And I've also wanted to do an interview on transfers for 8 years. I've never done a transfer interview. I've got one lined up and I'm doing much later this year with a few students who transferred to get a student's perspective. But I also, what I'm talking about is with like a transfer coordinator, transfer admission specialist. I had one lined up with SLU, St. Louis University. But, you know, one thing that can be frustrating in this is you have interviews all lined up and then people leave. I mean, I was supposed to do one with the University of Denver with Derek DeBose. And guess what? On my Miami trip, I met a counselor event and there's Derek DeBose. He's now at Miami Country Day School. So that can happen. But I spent some quality time with Rose, who is over transfer admissions at Lynn, and I want to do an interview with her as well as somebody from a much larger school. So Rose is already committed. I'm just going to work on coordinating that date and kind of hit, you know, let you hear transfers from the school perspective and then later from the student perspective. So that's something I'm pretty excited about and committed to getting to you in 2026. Even though it's going to be later in 2026. Okay, friends, on today's episode, I'm going to share an outstanding recommended resource for anyone who is either interested in selective schools or anyone who really likes to understand how the sausage is made, the nuances in college admissions that often go overlooked. And then we have a brand new interview for you, and it's an in-depth look at athletic recruiting with 4 different professionals. Experts in the world of athletic recruiting who work together in an organization called Student Athletic Advisors. Now, they spoke last Sunday to our Counselors Connect group. There were like 80-some counselors there for that. Got a great response. But I have also interviewed them. And for those of you who heard the Counselors Connect, this is different content than what they covered there. So the interview went over 1.5 hours, and I'm going to let you hear the first 35 minutes today. And then you'll hear kind of the way we traditionally chunk it out in 20-minute segments for parts 2, 3, and 4. So it's going to run throughout the entire month of March. Okay, friends, let's dive in with the recommended resource for the day. So, friends, back in 2019, I did a fly into the University of Pennsylvania, UPenn in Philly. And while it was mostly a UPenn program, they took about 3 hours and had us attend a panel event with other schools in the Quaker Consortium. So there's a very loose consortium called the Quaker Consortium, of which UPenn, Swarthmore, Haverford, and Bryn Mawr are the schools in the consortium. And then they invited Temple because just it's such a fixture in the city of Philly. So it was like a 3 hour program that was panel discussions. And then we had a social, you know, at the program. Now, the person who represented Swarthmore College wasn't Jim Bach. If you're a regular listener of our podcast, you know, Jim Bach is the chief enrollment officer at Swarthmore. And I interviewed him on your College Bound Kid podcast. If you're a regular listener, you heard that interview was up probably about a year ago. But it was Andrew Moe. He was the one who represented Swarthmore. Now, Andrew was the director of admissions at Swarthmore. I was very happy Andrew was there because he had really emerged as a national leader on how colleges have been neglecting rural students for so long. And he's providing a lot of training on how to be more effective for colleges at reaching rural students. And I'd been following him on that. He had such passion and conviction. His work eventually grew into the STARS College Network, STARS being an acronym for Small Towns and Rural Students. And you may remember Linda interviewed Marjorie Bentley, a University of Chicago Associate Director of Admissions, who is kind of the University of Chicago STARS Network contact. If you didn't hear that, that's a good interview, interview 177. Now, fast forward a couple months ago, and a podcast listener, dad named Chris from Ohio, he reaches out to me and he says, this guy, Andrew Hoffman's got some really good content on YouTube. I think you'll like it. Why don't you check it out? So I'm watching and thinking, boy, this guy looks really familiar, but I don't remember any Andrew Hoffman. Now, within 60 seconds, I knew his content was top notch. Seriously, within 60 seconds. Now, mind you, he'd spent almost 15 years in admissions at Vanderbilt and Swarthmore. And that's fantastic training to do kind of sort of in-depth background stuff on how highly selective schools work, which is a lot of what he does. So I start watching more and more videos and, you know, I just loved his nuance, his honesty and his depths of insights. For example, something you've heard me say on this podcast before, he pointed out, you know, that when it comes to demonstrated interest, if you use College Common data set, section C7, you'll find some schools are not always completely honest. He even mentioned some of the schools that on that form indicate that they don't use demonstrated interest that much, but any of us kind of doing this work know that they really do. That's just an example. Or another example, those of us who've been doing this work for a while, well, I'm going to get really transparent with you guys here. I'll be honest, Vanderbilt, it's a fantastic school, but it's really ticked off a lot of college counselors over the years because it was pretty obvious that they were really trying to build their brand by trying to have outrageously high test scores. Like, I felt maybe they were trying to compete to have the highest test scores in the country. Now, they never said that, but I'll put it this way. There's a score that you could send to the overwhelming majority of the Ivy League and they would be perfectly fine with it. And Vanderbilt was telling us on the college counseling side, that's not good enough. So it really kind of really peeved a lot of us. So on one of his videos, he even made a statement that I was at Vanderbilt and we were like notorious for like really wanting very, very high test scores. So he just kind of has an honesty and depth of insight. Anyway, I watched about 15 to 20 of his videos and honestly haven't seen a single one that wasn't very good. Not a single one. And about 2 months ago, I sent out a text message into a group of some of our co-hosts in this text message group that we blow each other's phone up all day. And I sent out a message that said, hey, you guys, I want you to check out this video. There's this guy on YouTube who's producing honestly the best content that I've seen for admission to highly selective schools. And I, you know, I put it out there and I sent a message. And then one of the co-hosts said, that's Andrew Moe. he got married and changed his name from Andrew Moe to Andrew Hoffman. And then the co-host looked at the content I said and said, that's Andrew. He's always coming up with some idea and doing it so well that he makes the rest of us look bad. But I say that just as a compliment to the quality of his work. And he's not giving me a penny to say this. I don't think he even remembers me, honestly. We met briefly in 2019. I do plan on asking now Andrew Hoffman to come on the podcast and share the wealth of his wisdom with you in an in-depth interview that would be really great because he can really go deep. And you guys know I love that. Well, anyway, I watched a brand new video that he just dropped today. His videos are usually like 10 to 15 minutes, but this one is like 23 minutes. And it was stupendous, which is not unusual because most of his content really is. But I want to bring it to your attention because I think it's really relevant for you understanding what schools are doing right now. So this video was it's called Inside Class Shaping, How Elite Colleges Finalize Admissions Decisions. And it goes into like what's going right now in highly selective private schools in particular. And he describes stuff that's kind of seldom talked about, you know, in terms of like how the shaping process really works. You know, I was actually looking at doing an in-depth interview on this podcast and how the shaping process really works. But, gee, this video is like so good. I feel like this is like what I would have wanted to cover with you guys. So I'm going to put the link in the show notes. And I want to encourage you to check out his outstanding content. You know, I don't want to be that podcast that just talks about our own content all the time. Like when there's other fantastic resources out there, I want to make sure that you guys are exposed to them. And this is as good a resource as I have found at explaining how highly selective admissions works and how decisions are made. So not only check out this video, but check out a bunch of his other content. And I'm going to reach out to him in the next 7 days, and hopefully we'll have him on here and you can hear from him directly. And maybe I'll even ask you to send in some of your questions directly and I'll see if he'll field them for us. All right, friends, let's transition to a brand new interview. It's one I did with four different people. Very excited about this interview. Two women, Katie and Amy. Two men, Joe and Reed, from three states, California, Texas, and Georgia. Two former college coaches. Two former college athletes. And we do a really deep dive on athletic recruiting and the process. And we give your students tips about what they need to know if you want to play a sport in college at the varsity level. We cover D1, D2, D3, NAIA. And friends, there are some parts of this college process that are very complex. One of them is, how does the money work? That's why I've probably done 8 to 10 interviews on this podcast on how the money works, some component of how the money works. And I have more lined up because that process is really, really, actually, that's not even counting the four I've done on outside scholarships now. So it's probably like 12 I've done just on how the money works. And this is the fourth time we're doing a deep dive on athletics, and I already have somebody committed to do another deep dive. But if you want to know the content that we've already covered, check out interview 120, interview 126, and interview 206. Once again, that's interview, not episode. So that will take you right to our website where you can hear the entire, I mean, they're normally between 1 and 2 hours, but the entire interview in its entirety without having to jump around part one, part two, part three. So those interviews plus this one give you about 7 hours of content if you want to understand athletic recruiting. But to be honest, even with 7 hours of content, we're just scratching the surface because it's complex. But this interview really does answer some very important questions that are foundational for your understanding of how athletic recruiting works. For example, how do I know what level I can play at? How do I know if a coach is truly interested in me? And how do I communicate effectively with a college I'm interested in? And we've never done one with four perspectives all on one episode. So without any further ado, let's hear from Katie, Amy, Joe, and Reed, student athletic advisors.
And now this week's interview with a special guest.
Friends, in part one of my interview on tips for athletes who want to play in college, Katie Anderson gives us the history of student athletic advisors, and she shares her bio and she shares her soccer background. Joe Slater gives us his bio, shares his baseball background. Amy Bryant gives her bio and shares her tennis and soccer background. Reid Meyer gives his background and shares his baseball background. Katie shares how student athlete advisors works and what they do. Reid shares some of the most recent changes that have occurred in the last 5 years when it comes to recruiting. Joe talks about the reallocation of scholarships and how that's changed recruiting drastically. Katie talks about some of the differences between Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, and Joe adds some additional insights. Amy talks about the myth that Division III is a lower level of athletics than Division I or Division II. And she also talks about the differences between the three divisions when it comes to how academic merit is used to attract students versus the ones who give no merit money based on academics. And she points out the similarities between some of the academically elite D1 conferences compared to D3. Reid talks about how the testing requirements have really changed when it comes to the eligibility center. And he talks about how the national letter of intent power is now managed by the colleges. And Joe adds some additional insights. Finally, Amy and Katie talk about how having a good test score can be helpful in the athletic recruiting process. You're really hearing a double episode. Normally, I would run 35 minutes of content over 2 weeks, but I'm giving you a 35-minute dose of this interview because the whole interview ran an hour and a half, and I want to sum it up in four parts. But I really love this interview. Hopefully, you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Listen and enjoy. Friends, I'm very excited today. We have four special guests. They're all from the Student Athlete Advisors, Katie, Amy, Reid, and Joe, and I'm going to let each of you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourself, and you're all over the country as well. Let us know where you are.
All right. Thank you. I'll start it off. My name is Katie Anderson. I am based in Dana Point, California, so Orange County, for those of you who are familiar with it. I have been a college counselor since 2013. I co-founded the Student Athlete Advisors back in 2015 with David Steckel. For those of you who have been around for a while, unfortunately, David passed away from COVID. So fast forward about a year or so, and I invited Joe, Reid, and Amy to join me because I really felt like they all had a fabulous, you know, a variety of backgrounds, coaching perspectives, player perspectives, and we're all college counselors who specialize in athletics. I was an athlete in college. I played soccer at Duke University back in the 80s, and that's kind of how I got into this business in the first place.
Great. Who's next?
I'll go. My name is Joe Slater. I am an counselor out in Sacramento, California, so Northern California. I come into this world through coaching. I was a baseball player in college here at Sonoma State University, a Division II school in Northern California. Then I went overseas and played in Germany in the Bundesliga for 3 years. Started coaching while I was out there and loved it, and decided I was going to come back to California and become a baseball coach for the rest of my life. And I made it about 6 years. You know, I was at a junior college and then two Division I schools, University of San Francisco and University of the Pacific. And then just kind of ran out of steam with the grind of college baseball and coaching, and switched to administration and went to UC Berkeley and spent 4 years at Cal in the athletic department in a bunch of different roles, director of operations, fundraising, and then ultimately got into the admissions side, working with athletes on the pre-reads and the applications to Cal to make sure everybody was, you know, making it through the process, and really fell in love with it. So took the Berkeley certificate course in college advising. And then once I graduated, went out on my own and started working directly with families, you know, on the academic and athletic sides of this process.
Thank you.
And I'm Amy Bryant. I am based in Decatur, Georgia here, very close to you,
yes.
Mark. And I coached at Emory University for 23 years. The grind, I understand what Joe was talking about. I definitely felt that, but I kept going because I liked winning so much. We had a really strong program. We had a lot of success there. We won 8 national titles while I was coaching. So, you know, it was fun. And then in 2022, I decided to hang it up and started supporting student athletes with the college recruiting process. And that's what I'm doing now. I help student athletes from all sports, I really enjoy it. Probably the two sports that I seem to get a lot of traction in are tennis and soccer. Tennis, obviously, because that's what I coached for as long as I did. Soccer, I also played soccer in college, so I was a two-sport athlete as well, but have a lot of fun helping athletes from all different areas. I have fencers, skiers, you name it. I've probably supported a student athlete in that sport.
Fantastic.
And I'll round it out here. So my name is Reed Meyer, based down in Houston, Texas. I've been an IEC since about 2016. And similar to Joe, I came sort of to this by way of baseball. I was a pitcher at Texas Tech University, followed by Weatherford Junior College, followed by a full-time student at the University of Texas at Austin. I managed to burn myself out of this sport that I love so much after just 2 years in college, and kind of caused me to have a real passion for understanding why I didn't love this sport so much after spending so much time and effort trying to play it in college. Got me more involved with my college counselor back in high school. Wanted to learn more about this piece of the puzzle and really just kind of fell in love with working with athletes, but working with them on kind of that admissions and transition side of the process. So that's been my passion since I started this thing. Really love youth sport development, really love youth sport policy. I'll get on the soapbox and talk about that anytime. But yeah, excited to be a part of the group.
So thank you guys for coming. And before we get into some questions, you know, maybe Katie, you can talk a little bit about sort of how student athlete advisors works, because you all individually have your own counseling load, but yet you also sort of collaborate. So do you want to maybe share that?
Sure, absolutely. And I love this question because I've been asked about it in many of the professional development circles as I've spoken at various conferences, and people wondering how it is we formed our group as other counselors are similar, you know, interested in doing the similar thing. So this officially is my business. My name is the one associated with it. I formed it together with David Steckel. But again, on paper, Joe, Reed, and Amy are licensing the right to use the student athlete advisor's name. Again, that's just a paperwork thing. The reality is that we all contribute depending on the various products that we produce, and we have lots of different things that we do. We have video series that's focused on counselors. We have video series that are now what we're launching that are focused on families and that are sport specific, really meant to be that like in between, I'm just getting into this. How do I, you know, what do I need to know about athletic recruiting for my child's sport? And then we also have relationships with large IEC groups who use us as their athletics recruiting specialists for their kids because they don't have someone on their staff who deals with athletics recruiting. And then we also have relationships with online high schools. We've got a couple of different schools that we've been working with. Holston Academy, we just did a webinar with them, Laurel Springs, Preston's Academy. So we've definitely been developing many different avenues. And again, everybody in our group contributes to that as well as benefits from it. And we've all been able to grow our businesses and reach many, many more counselors with partnership relationships and all that sort of stuff.
No, that's really helpful. So there's been a lot of changes in the college recruiting world, college in general. I'd love for you to talk about any changes you've seen from a recruiting standpoint, placement standpoint, in, say, the last 5 years?
Yeah, I can dive in and kind of get the ball rolling on that. I think what we all probably realize and what we've seen with the kids that we've worked with is that it feels as though the funnels change every year. You have the advent and sort of the discovery and usage of the transfer portal, which is obviously a huge point of conversation, which has given a ton of kids that are already in college opportunities to jump from division to division, from school to school, and do so without sort of this penalty or delay to essentially compete with high school kids nowadays. You have the continuance of junior college and kids matriculating from that area. You have the globalization of the recruiting effort and making it even easier to find kids from different countries that want to come and compete. And so as a student athlete, especially, what I find, and I think what we all find, is that, you know, kids are looking at folks that are 2 or 3 years ahead of them in high school. They're seeing where those kids are getting recruited to. They're expecting that same standard, that same bank of schools, whatever it might be. And we're getting to a point nowadays in college sports where you can't necessarily compare apples to apples in that sense. You don't know what a school's roster is going to look like year over year. There's not this same kind of expected trajectory of, okay, we're going to take this many high school kids. It's going to be this many kids that we're going to get from junior college. It's all a little bit cattywampus, for lack of a better term. And so based on each school, based on each coach's preferences, and really just what the market, quote unquote, looks like on a year-to-year basis, you're going to have kids that are going to have opportunities at different places that may not necessarily match up exactly what you're expecting them to match up to based on what you've seen in your area, based on what you've seen with other kids that are getting recruited in your same space. And it does create a bit more of confusion in that process. And so I think just to start it off, the number of funnels and the size of funnels that you're competing with as a high school kid nowadays is vastly different than it was 3 to 5 years ago.
Let me ask about a few things that I hear out there. One is that some of the non-revenue producing sports are getting phased out, or if not phased out, less spots are being allocated for them as schools put more and more of their money into NIL or into the revenue generating sports. Is that something that you've seen as a trend at all? It's just something I hear from students.
I can dive in again here really quick on this. So yeah, there's been a change at the NCAA level now, specifically at the Division I level, with the advent of name, image, and likeness and sort of the redistribution of scholarship dollars. And so instead of the way that it was before, where we had sort of established headcounts, if you will, or equivalency numbers within each of these specific sports, baseball, for example, there was 11.7 scholarships to give to 27 guys on a 35-man roster. It was all very sort of structured in that sense. You knew what those numbers were. You knew what schools could fund up to. What we've done now at the Division I level is we've essentially given schools a giant pot of money and said, you've got roughly $20 million as an athletic budget to distribute as you wish, where you wish, how you wish. And as much as we would love for higher institutions to always be, you know, nonprofit functions of utilitarianism, college sports make money. They fall a little bit more on that capitalism side of things. They want to invest their money where they're going to get the biggest return many times. And we find that in sports like football, men's and women's basketball, and these sort of what we call revenue generating sports. And so before, where we might have had kind of an established or structured amount of support available in Olympic sports, additional women's sports, things like that, now you're finding that that money can be distributed really unequally across those sports. And so you will have scenarios where the football and the basketball team make up close to 90% of that budget, and then everybody else kind of gets everything else. And so the amount of money available at the Division I level can be quite different based on what schools are prioritizing and where they're choosing to put that funding. You still do have that sort of traditional NCAA structure at the Division II level for athletic scholarships. The money is less, and at Division III, there are no athletic scholarships. And so that's sort of where you see the breakdown financially in those three areas.
Yeah, it probably would be good to just give an overview. We probably have very different levels of knowledge from our listeners on this topic between Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA. Somebody want to kind of give an overview of that and help the listeners kind of see that big picture and some of the main differences between the various divisions?
Sure, I can take that one. So when it comes to specifically the recruiting and how that can differ as well within those divisions, I think you're going to find that the divisions differ in a couple of different ways. One would be just how recruiting happens and the pace at which it happens. We'll start with that. The Division I schools, oftentimes we sort of divide, in our world, we divide them into sort of two categories. One would be Power Four conference schools, and the other group would be the mid-majors, which would be basically any Division I school outside of the Power Four conference schools. The Power Four conference schools tend to do early recruiting. Many of them have those big football, big basketball programs. Many of them have also top athletics programs across the board. So they can go out and they can do that early recruiting. They might be looking at kids. And to say that they're looking at kids as early as freshman and sophomore year in high school, they may not, according to the rules, be able to talk to them yet officially, but they would certainly have their eyes on them. And they have the staff to be able to do that. Whereas I think timeline on recruiting for Division II schools, you would find that the Division I mid-majors might have a little bit more, second semester, sophomore years when they might start to really look at kids a little more seriously, and then throughout junior year, and really like to have their roster, their ideal roster opportunities kind of wrapped up by the end of junior year and into the fall of senior year. Division II, definitely Division II and Division III schools sort of wait for the fallout of all the kids who thought they were D1 but didn't realize that they weren't going to get those D1 opportunities. So traditionally, their recruiting maybe starts a little bit like, you know, summertime just after sophomore year. Again, their staffs tend to be a little, you know, bit smaller, and, you know, recruiting, again, happens just a little bit later. Top ranked D3 programs might have a little bit of an early start with second semester sophomore year. And again, the rest of Division III sort of waits for the fallout. So again, depending on which types of schools the student athlete is interested in, just realizing that, you know, starting early in this process can be, a benefit. But you have to be patient with it, because many coaches just aren't ready yet to do their recruiting, depending on the sport, depending on what season it's in, and depending on, you know, how old you are. Other types of questions that we get around, you know, differences in these conferences would be things like, I mean, the coach's influence in admissions. Again, Division I are the biggest schools with the biggest budgets, and the most influence in, you know, their coaches have the most influence in the admissions department. And that also relates to the money that they have to be able to support athletes with from an athletic scholarship standpoint. And Reed already sort of talked a little bit about that. So D1 coaches and D2 coaches have athletic scholarships to give out, and they tend to have a significant amount of pull in admissions, meaning that they can sort of tell their admissions department, hey, you know, they do that academic pre-read, they make sure everything's good with admissions. And as long as there's no conflict there, if they want to recruit a kid, then that's something that they can, you know, identify what that roster, what they want that to look like, and kind of pull, you know, give that pull through admissions. Division III schools have a little bit different scenario. Oftentimes, again, there are certain schools and certain sports where you may find that coaches have slots, and they can, you know, as best as they can, say to a recruit that they really want to give one of those, you know, if they can recruit 5 students, they might have 2 slots where they can kind of say, I really want this kid to fill that slot. Again, most, I would say a general rule across the board would be, make sure your Division III student is a good academic and financial fit with those institutions, because we see it all the time where, especially on the financial side, a family is really excited about the opportunity and then finds out that they have no merit aid because they don't have athletics aid in Division III, have no merit aid to give, and therefore they can't actually afford to go to that school. So really ideally in Division III, you want your student athlete to know that the coaches may have some pull, but not nearly the same as a Division I or Division II, and that financially and academically, they need to be a strong fit with those institutions. So those are generally, and I will also just mention that, you know, like I mentioned, D1 schools are the biggest, the brand names that, you know, a lot of families recognize. Division II schools are often, you know, some privates in that group, but oftentimes public schools. And here in the Western United States, the Western Undergraduate Exchange is kind of filled with a lot of D2 schools. Division III schools tend to be small privates, although you've got sort of the random UC Santa Cruz and NYU that don't exactly fit that model, but for the most part, small private institutions, lower budgets, more regional play, shorter schedules, and that kind of thing. And then NAIA, just to mention that, also similar academic, sort of mid-tier academics that sort of match up with Division II academically. And they're, you know, NAIA schools are all over the country and mostly small private and oftentimes religious, but not always. So you've got lots of 4-year options if you're looking to kind of cast a wide net.
And I would, if I could just also jump in a little bit, I think one thing that we all like to get across is that the level of play is not segmented into Division I, Division II, Division III. You know, Amy can speak to the quality of, you know, Division III, especially at those higher level institutions, like, you know, an Emory tennis going, and I bet they would stack up very well, you know, in Division I, against any of those teams. To me, one of the biggest differences is just the time commitment and the amount of ownership over the athletes from the team between those two. And it really, I mean, Division I, just experiencing it from a coaching standpoint, the travel is one of the biggest things. I remember my first experience of Division I was at University of San Francisco. We went weeks 1 through 4 of the season at Texas Tech, at Tulane, at University of New Mexico, and then home for our first series. And we had Tuesday games in between those. And I mean, like, the amount of class that the kids were able to go to during that stretch was minuscule. And, you know, and now, especially with these divisions, you know, you look at the ACC and the Big Ten spanning from, you know, Oregon and Washington to New Jersey and Maryland, and, you know, and, you know, looking at the schedules that the different teams have to go through to make those travel work, and it's incredible. So, you know, Division I is just the amount of time that is required is so high. Division II and Division III are a little bit more regional and a little bit more controlled for the amount of time that the student athletes have to play and practice. But that doesn't mean that the quality of play is necessarily lower.
Thank you for that. Can you speak to a real common misperception that I know is out there? So, you know, people will hear that Division III doesn't have scholarships, and then some people immediately get turned off. But can you talk about the difference between a Division III school that may give no merit money and is exclusively need-based versus a Division III school that may have academic merit and may be able to use academic merit coupled with the student's athletic performance to still end up in a pretty decent financial package for a family that can't afford to pay full sticker? Because I know that's a common perception, right? Oh, Division III. No. In fact, my daughter played high-level travel, and this would be a thing. People would say, oh, I can't do D3. There's like no scholarship money, not realizing that they still might get a really good package from a D3 school, either need-based or academic merit. Anybody want to speak to that?
Yeah, I'll take that for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's this misconception that, you know, Joe talked about, that the level is less in Division III, which is, you know, not true. Certainly, I think it's important to remember that there are about 450 schools in Division III, so it is the largest division. So you do have a wide spread of talent that exists, you know, but at the top levels of Division III, I think most programs are competitive with some mid-major D1s and, you know, similar like top 10, top 20, maybe D2 schools. In terms of the money, you're going to find a wide range of options as well in Division III. So generally speaking, the schools that don't rely on athletics as an enrollment driver, those schools don't give merit aid or don't give very much merit aid. And what I mean by an enrollment driver, for any families that are listening, I mean, if they don't need athletes to fill seats or to fill seats in the classroom, fill beds in their dorms, if they don't need those, then they don't have any reason to give any discounts, for example, on their tuition prices. So the most selective schools that we see in Division III, they just don't have to give out any money. And they might have, you know, a very selective scholars program, but it's really elite and very difficult to be awarded that money. Now, if you go maybe a tier down in the rankings, and again, you know, I use the word rankings to associate with the academic level of the school or the perceived academic level of the school, because they're all wonderful schools. You know, you can get a great education anywhere, and research has proven that. Doesn't matter what the ranking of the school is, you can still go and be successful. But in any case, if you were to step back a little, maybe don't look at the top 20 ranked schools in Division III. Those are the schools that are giving money to their students because they need to fill seats. They are not allowed to provide this merit based on a student's athletic ability. However, that's completely against NCAA Division III rules. So these are merit-based scholarships that are given out to students and student athletes alike. However, if a student athlete is recruited, they might be able to find out that they're getting that money a little bit sooner than a typical student would, because they don't have that connection with the admissions office that a coach provides. So that's what we're looking at in Division III. And I will point out that it's very similar with the merit aid, or, you know, the money that's out there, when we compare Division III elite institutions to, for example, the Ivy Leagues. The Ivy Leagues don't give any merit aid. They don't need to. They fill seats. They don't need, you know, athletics as a as an enrollment driver. And they don't need scholars as enrollment drivers. They have no trouble getting people to attend, right? They've got the prestige factor. So, but the Ivy League's unique in that they also don't give, they're in Division I, but they also don't give athletic scholarships. And there's other schools out there that operate similarly. There's a football conference that exists that gives no athletic scholarships in California. There are other institutions out there that just don't practice giving out athletic scholarships, and they may or may not give academic or merit aid as well. So all this to say, it's very hard to generalize when we say, you know, Division I versus Division II versus Division III, and what their offerings are, or what their level is. What's important is that a student athlete who is recruited communicates with the coach, asks the right questions to get the right answers so that they understand what they're looking at the very beginning of the process in terms of how much it's going to cost them.
Thank you. Thank you. Because that's confusing to people.
Mark,
yeah, go ahead.
I'll just add on to that. So this year we worked together with Big J Educational Consulting. Their website is bigjeducationalconsulting.com. They did research every year on about 360 schools, and many of those schools that Amy just talked about are on their list. And I asked them to overlay the NCAA divisions and conferences on top of their research list. And you can go into that list and you can look up Division III schools, you can look them up by conference, and you can see their acceptance rate, the regular decision acceptance rate, early decision acceptance rate, how much merit aid they offer on average, and to what percentage of students they offer that merit aid. And I think all of exactly what Amy just described becomes very visual when you realize what types of schools are offering what, and then also realizing which schools are the more merit aid friendly. So that's a public resource. There's no requirement to give an email address or anything. It's out there for families and counselors to look at. And I would highly encourage you to, if you're thinking about Division III, to take a look at that list.
All right. Thank you. There are a couple more changes, and this is more D1, but I'd still love for you to talk about them. So one is the requirement for standardized testing that used to be part of the eligibility index, and how that changed, what, around 2023, I believe, if someone could speak to that. And then also, people hear a lot about NIL, National Letter of Intent, and National Letter of Intent is not National Letter of Intent anymore, right? So those are a couple of things that are myths out there. If you could sort of clear up sort of changes when it comes to academic eligibility with standardized testing, and then NLI, National Letter of Intent. Sorry, I said National NIL. I have money on the mind, not NLI, not NIL, but I'll let you speak to that. Sorry.
I can kick this one off and let my colleagues expand. The testing requirement in the NCAA Eligibility Center, which is the eligibility center that all student athletes have to go through to be eligible to compete at Division I, Division II level, and then there's the essentially registering for Division III. The testing portion kind of went by way of the dinosaur in conjunction with COVID. As many schools were moving to test optional, the NCAA was trying to sort of adapt along with those schools. There were a lot of kids that didn't have access to testing, and I think what they found was similar to what a lot of schools found, which was they can garner a lot from the other eligibility standards that they still have required, which is a 2.3 GPA along with a series of classes that must be taken in high school in order to be eligible to compete. So from a testing standpoint, best I can tell, they pulled that away during COVID, kind of realized that they could get what they needed from an eligibility standpoint with these other metrics they had, and decided to just keep that sort of additional block, if you will, off of the eligibility center for the NCAA. So That's kind of the testing piece of it. The other side, the National Letter of Intent, has now, the power of the National Letter of Intent has now been given effectively to the schools. So they now have athletics aid agreements that they will provide to students. And in a lot of form and function, it looks very similar to what a National Letter of Intent is. A lot of those timelines are lined up, the way that the structure and the understanding, the binding agreement, the ways in which you can exit out of the agreement are all quite similar to a National Letter of Intent. It just is now housed under the schools themselves, as opposed to the NLI body sort of managing that in a universal space. So I'll let anybody else that wants to kind of expand on that do so, but that's kind of the 10,000 foot view.
I would say on the testing side, you know, the NCAA for eligibility doesn't require it anymore, like Reed said, and I would be shocked if they ever, you know, brought that back. But that doesn't mean that it's not super important for student athletes who want to get recruited to take the test and potentially do well on the test, because there are still a lot of schools that are going to require it. And even though, you know, it's not needed for eligibility, like, it is still needed if you want to play, you know, at an Ivy League school, at a, you know, at a big Southern school, anything like that. And, you know, when it comes to academics, the message is generally just like, do the better you do, the more options you're going to have to get recruited. And the thing that I hate to see the most in the world is a student athlete get seen by a coach who likes them and wants to talk to them and wants to potentially recruit them, and then finds out that their academics, either test score or grades, are not up to par. And they hear from the coach and says, hey, sorry, we can't work with you, even though we liked you. We can't work with you. And it's just devastating to see that, you know. And so, you know, taking the test seriously, doing it early in the process for a student athlete is a really, really good idea if you want to give yourself as many good options as you possibly can.
It may be that you ultimately decide to only apply to test optional schools. But like Joe said, taking the test, having a score that you can share with coaches can help to make that decision and choose the option that's best for you. There are schools that are still test optional where the coach will ask for the score. And when they present a student athlete's case to the admissions office, they will present a standardized test score as part of the student athlete's academic profile. And, you know, that it's just an extra piece of information that can help when they're considering your rigor, when they're considering your grades, when they're considering your test scores, they're considering you as a whole person. The more pieces of information you can share, the better.
All right.
And I'll just add on to that for a second and regarding the timing of testing, because both Joe and Amy have mentioned the fact that doing it early is important. Having a test score you're happy with, again, that, you know, sometimes you don't know, these schools kind of come out of nowhere in the spring of your junior year. But generally having a test score you're happy with by the end of your junior year makes it a lot easier for a coach who wants to do an academic pre-read on you over the summer, maybe June, July of between your junior and senior year. If you've got that number already locked in and you're happy with it and it's appropriate for the types of schools that you are approaching or that are interested in recruiting you, that can just make the process go more smoothly for you as a recruit. There's nothing worse, and I've seen it happen, where kids are waiting because they have to retake the test in the fall, and other kids got in line first with admissions with the coach because they had it all wrapped up with a bow, right? And it just makes it so much smoother for the coach to be able to do that academic pre-read, present their transcript, their test scores, their senior year classes. At some schools, like a Johns Hopkins, for example, I've had coaches request essays, request a full student resume, not just an athletic resume. Having that all prepared in for that timing is just makes it easier for everyone. Certainly, that doesn't mean that it's the end of the road if you don't have that in time. But it, again, it just makes it easier.
No, thank you for that. Friends, this concludes part one of the interview on tips for athletes who want to play in college. Hopefully join us next week for part two on Thursday's episode. Hillary will join me and answer a question from a listener who wants to know, how can I tell if a college has a commuter culture? Next, Stephen Bird from New America will continue to share his research on how colleges are saddling low-income students with expensive parent loans. Finally, Susan Tree will join me for the final part of our interview with Kelly Walter, who is in year 45 at Boston University, and she helps us to understand Boston University. Friends, there are a few things that I've learned in now in year 9 about effective communication. You know, one is that an effective analogy, if told well, is priceless. A picture truly is worth 1,000 words. And another thing is that repetition is effective. It penetrates and sticks. And it's March 1st, friends. This means we're 2 months away from when decisions need to be made. May 1st, National Candidate Reply Day, Decision Day. For seniors and seniors, as well as parents of seniors, you're going to have a lot of voices in your ear telling you, if you're a parent, what they think your student should do, if you're a student, telling you what they think you should do. Well, I want to be one of those voices in your ear with this message. It's not where you go. It's not where you go. It's not where you go, but it's what you do when you get there, and it's what you do when you get out of there. And that is what will determine your career success or your lack of success. See you on Thursday, friends. And that's our show. A big thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in this week. If you find this podcast helpful, please follow us and you will get every single episode as soon as they are released. If you want to support our podcast, you can click the share button and send it to your friends and acquaintances. You can say positive things about your college-bound kid on your social media feed. And you can help us stay commercial-free and pay our staff by donating on the yourcollegeboundkid.website. You can write a review for us on Apple or Spotify. And if you have a question or a recommendation, just go to speakpipe.com/YCBK, hit the orange button, and speak. We will do our best to get your question in your own voice on an upcoming episode. I am the producer of the podcast, and I live in Metro Atlanta. We have a fantastic team that has over 200 years of admissions and counseling experience. Shout out to our co-host, Dr. Lisa Ruff in North Carolina, Susan Tree in Pennsylvania, Vince Garcia in California, Julia Esquivel in Massachusetts, Linda Depker in Missouri, Andy Strickler, the Chief Enrollment Officer at Connecticut College, New London, Connecticut, Hillary Dickman, an admission officer at Colorado College in Colorado Springs, and our international admissions expert, Kevin Newton in Dallas, Texas. Our sensational sound engineer is Nemanja Matvic. Our amazing music is from Victor Allen Weeks. Marketing designs from Kimberly Bloss. Our reliable webmaster is Stylianos Dimitru. Website updates are done by Joyce Stucker. Our image editor is Vlad Honchar. If you want to have a coaching session with me, just text me at 404-664-4340. If you want to reach someone else on our team, all of our bios with contact info can be found at yourcollegeboundkid.com under the About YCBK tab. If you want to get our free monthly YCBK newsletter, YCBK Plus, it is also under the About YCBK tab. If you want to see our recommended books and websites, they are on our website under the Resources tab. While you're on our website, check out our hundreds of interviews in their entirety. Check out our college spotlights, our blog, and our upcoming events. We think of you as our listening family, and we look forward to meeting with you every single Monday and every single Thursday.